Thank you, Anish, for this invitation to speak. We started this session with Sweet Cherry, so it's kind of sweet. We're ending up with that as well. So I'm going to talk about some of the work we've been doing at WSU in my lab in collaboration with Matthew Whiting. We are really interested in understanding how abscission happens in Sweet Cherry. I'm going to share some of the results we've been getting out there. So everybody kind of knows this story that Sweet Cherry is a non-climacteric fruit. It's been known for quite a long time, and cherry basically shows a very beautiful decline in respiration rates without any climacteric during harvest. And of course, there are several reasons for that. We've known that. And recently, we were able to demonstrate, we published a study in 2013 where we were able to pinpoint what genes, there are two ACO and ACS genes in Sweet Cherry where there are some nonsense mutations, basically disrupting the ethylene pathway. We basically compared the Sweet Cherry genome as well as the almond genome, which we had generated in our lab and released in 2013 as well. And compared that with the double haploid peat genome to really clearly define that these mutations are perhaps the reason why this plant has basically developed a non-climacteric way of ripening. Anyway, so one would expect from this that there is no role of ethylene in fruit development in Sweet Cherry. I mean, that's kind of a known sort of we accepted fact that we've gone with. However, back in 2006, just about the time actually I was joining WSU in my program in genomics, Matthew Whiting had done some work prior to that as well where he basically sprayed Ethifon about 15 to 20 days before harvest, or basically one of his graduate students, Eric Smith, did some exciting work to see the impact of pre-harvest application of Ethifon, which basically is metabolized and it releases ethylene, on what happens to the fruit. They wanted to see if they could hasten the ripening or kind of alter the fruit quality on the tree. That was kind of the goal. But interestingly, what they found out was that in Bing varieties, the pedicel fruit junction would kind of get altered in Bing, where there would be a formation of a very clean abscission zone that would reduce the pressure required or the force required to separate the pedicel from the fruit. When you have a clean abscission zone formation, you can actually enable mechanical harvesting from there on. And there were some Chelan on the other side. It's kind of a variety where no matter what, how much ethaphone you sprayed, there was no induction of this formation over there, or abscission zone formation over there. So this was a very interesting model, and I kind of found it very fascinating that we have a particular variety within Sweet Cherry germplasm where you can induce the formation of the abscission zone, drop the pressure required below 0.4 kilograms, and that's sort of the threshold. Once you drop below that, you can enable mechanical harvesting, essentially. So the formation of this clean abscission zone would allow mechanical harvesting. Of course, you then end up getting a stem-free cherry. Now, we obviously, everybody starts thinking, stem-free cherry, who wants to eat stem-free cherry? As part of this USDA program, there was some market survey analysis also done that stem-free cherries actually last longer, especially if they are from the Bing variety, where you have a clean abscission zone formation. By the way, there's another variety called Skeena, which naturally abscises. The pressure drops automatically. That means, and by reference to that, it also means that there's a natural formation of this abscission zone. So clearly that this can offer several advantages in this process. But why do we really care about mechanical harvesting? Of course, this is a very old photograph with very large letters, but the reality hasn't changed too much right now. By some calculations, about 70% of cherry orchards still need to transition to high density or lower orchards. These are some USDA numbers. So there are some old orchards right now. People are using ladders. You know, safety is a big concern, but I think especially in the U.S. domestic market, one of the major concerns right now, which even supersedes safety issues, is labor shortage. This is an article from this June where a lot of the cherry fruit was not harvested at all. So, I mean, we have gone to, there's a practical reality. The cherry industry is booming. We are at $750 million market today in the U.S., and it's increasing because several new markets have opened up. But if you can't harvest our fruit, game over. We can't do much with that. So what we can do as scientists or as people working with the industry is kind of give the option in the hands or provide that option to the farmers. They can either mechanically harvest their fruit or they can just do it traditionally. So that's the whole kind of premise of this project, essentially. So I present to you a very beautiful biological model that Matt had discovered. We have Shilan on one end of the spectrum where mechanical harvest is not possible because you don't see that clean formation of an abscission zone and you cannot induce it. Then we have the kind of the ideal situation where Bing comes in, where you can mechanically harvest when you apply ethaphon, ethylene, basically where the abscission zone formation can be induced. The third one is Skeena, where you don't need any ethylene, but the abscission zone is formed. And some of the farmers tell me that they don't really plant Skeena in areas like Hood River or the Dalles, which is very windy, or Dalles in particular in Oregon. They don't plant it because it's called shattering. The fruit basically drops. So we have to kind of see where we plant these things. But I think if you really think about it, a Bing-like variety could really fill in that niche market and niche need for the farmer where they have the option. So we've actually utilized this model to do a lot of molecular work to understand what are the genes involved in this process. And I'd like to, we've talked a lot about genes in this session. I would like to just kind of make a caveat here. We are understanding gene expression. We are not studying proteins right now. So this is sort of a limited study based on gene expression only. I mean, I don't want to overreach and explain all the biology based on gene expression because there are other aspects to this as well. So what we did in this particular case, we've basically been doing phenotyping of the PFRF, which basically stands for pedicel fruit retention force. Just as I mentioned earlier, a force below 0.4 kilograms indicates a complete and clean abscission zone formation, which enables mechanical harvesting. And this formation of a clean zone is very important because then when the harvest happens, the fruit, the junction is not ruptured, there is no chance for any disease. So there are other advantages to this as well. Food safety, obviously, you could completely mechanize the process. I know that all the tart cherries are mechanically harvested, there is a lot of information available in that area. So what we had done was basically we applied ethaphon for 15 days pre-harvest at 3.5 liters per hectare. But we are working with three different genotypes where bloom dates are different and by the time the fruit matures is also different. So we really kind of struggled with this. How do we look at similar developmental stages to identify? 15 days before harvest is a very arbitrary number to work with. So we kind of went back and looked at, can we compress these timelines into percentages? And that's exactly what we did. We normalized the entire developmental stage as percentage of the entire developmental period. We broke it down. Then we started looking at applying this compound at 80% development and then 100% development. And again, we've done this experiment about for the last 5 years. And Shilan, behaves always normally. This is with ethaphon and this is without ethaphon. Bing, as you can see, drops below 0.4 kg. And Skeena, obviously, normally drops below 0.4 kg, basically indicating that this model of kind of compressing three different timelines into percentages can kind of give us, we can compare apples to apples, cherries to cherries, I mean. Okay, so where is this abscission happening? Essentially, the abscission is happening right here. So we kind of went to the source. We wanted to study what are the genes that are active in this case. So we took two basic approaches. There is a lot of information available about regarding the genes that are involved in abscission from multiple systems, Arabidopsis and tomato. Basically, we looked at these two systems where we look at leaf abscission as well as fruit abscission or flower abscission. There are some genes available for that. So that's kind of, we call it the known gene approach. Let's look at the expression of the known genes. But as last time I checked, sweet cherry was neither tomato nor Arabidopsis, and the responses in this could be expected to be different. So I'll walk you through with some data we have from the gene expression work, and then also we performed some RNA-seq, especially on these small tissues which were harvested in the field. So we kind of compile a very high-level pathway for genes that are involved in abscission, which is documented. And since Bing was the responding variety, where we could see an actual phenotypic response to ethophone application, we collected samples 6 hours of after application of ethophone. And actually, interestingly, my previous graduate student, former grad student Tyson Kapke, started working on this project. He had no idea how to apply chemicals in the field, but we worked with Matthew Whiting very closely, and we were able to do that. And later on, one of my other grad students, Ben Killian, who's been kind of spearheading this work, he was very ably supported by Jonathan Abarca, who's actually an ASHS scholar this year. He grew up on a cherry farm, and he taught us how to do these applications. So we can learn a lot from each other, I guess. This is the ETR gene, which is basically responding to the ethylene. What you see here is the relative expression. This is quantitative RT-PCR. These values are, 2 delta CT. What we were looking at was 0 hours, six hours after application, 7 and 14 days. Because if you recall, we were applying this product 14, 15 days before harvest. So we wanted to really check what is happening with these abscission-related genes over a period of the entire post-application. So reds are controls, and treatments are blue. You see no real difference in ETR. It's like, why is that? You just applied ethylene, we should see an increase. And that was our first indication that these genes may not be the ones. Similarly, as we go down into HAE, HSL, same story, we did not see much expression. Then we looked at the MAP kinase or MAP kinase pathway genes. Basically, what we saw was there was an expression later on, which is kind of expected because if these are the downstream genes that are getting activated with this process, we can expect these genes to get activated while the abscission zone is being formed or finalized or final stages. Similarly, we looked at some more genes which are more closer to the abscission event, anagluconases and beta-galactosidase. Again, these, well, we saw real no difference, but with beta-galactosidase, there was an increase at the end. So we did this experiment over 2 seasons and with 3 replicates each, and this was clearly an indicator we were not capturing the first responders. And the idea is that if once you apply ethophone, one would expect within a few hours excitation of a pathway that then results in abscission zone formation in ethylene. In Bing variety. So obviously these known players were really not playing any part in this. And that's when we jumped into the RNA-seq part. We had collected the same samples. So this was kind of the experimental plan for our abscission zone work. We looked at 3 varieties, Bing, Shellan, and Skeena, which present a very beautiful model. Ethophone treatments as previously described. Again, sample, it was a time course transcriptome experiment where we collected samples at 0 hours, 6 hours, 7 days, and 14 days. We basically did an Illumina-seq, RNA-seq on this, all the usual steps for data processing. And then because we have this data from 3 different genotypes, we are also able to very quickly look at SNPs across these genes as well. Sorry. So for the connoisseurs of data analysis, this is just a workflow. I'm not going to go through all of it, but it's a pretty involved process, as you guys know. Not only our time, but basically computational time. These are pretty large data sets. And through all this process, in the end, we were looking at, what are the ethylene-related genes when we look at the Go annotations, looking at abscission-related genes. So we isolated, basically did some co-expression analysis also, and we were able to pull out ethylene response cluster. This is basically about 15, 20 genes in this particular case. So it's a pretty small cluster that we could capture. And we could basically see that within 6 hours of application, these were not annotated at this point, but we could see several of these genes that are highly activated, almost 200-fold activated once you apply ethylene in the field. And then we did some annotation, and I just give you an example. I can't show you all the big tables and expression data on this. But some of these genes, BAHD, SL transfer, DCR-like, ethylene responsive transcription factor, maybe the ones that the primers that we used earlier, looking at the ERS was not the right kind, but we were able to actually pull out some of these genes which show 140 to 124 expression difference within 6 hours of application. And remember, this is gene expression data in that very small abscission zone region. So we kind of took a surgical approach, went to the tissue where the action is happening within Bing. And this data is only showing you 6 hours after. Of course, we are continuing and we have done all the analysis at the 7 day and 14 days, but that really is to kind of build a gene expression-based model of how abscission is progressing. But our main interest, if we are to deliver varieties or possibilities to farmers, is to look at what are the initial genes involved in this process. These are just four of the several genes we have identified. Now, from here onwards, we have expression data. We have the supporting qRT-PCR data as well to demonstrate that these are the genes that are involved. But the next question is why? Why are these genes getting activated in Bing and not in others? So what we've done is we've subsequently gone into looking at these genes across the three different genotypes and done extensive Sanger sequencing. What we find is that, for example, in most of these genes, because sweet cherry is genetically a pretty narrow germplasm, it's not a very diverse genotype, the coding region is pretty much similar. We don't see any amino acid differences. But we have definite indication now that we are able to identify some of these regulatory regions, promoter regions that are different, which indicate, and there are some putative ethylene binding factors in this, what we've seen. And very interestingly, we sequenced several clones from each genotype or each variety. It seems like they're homozygous for this different allele type. So the idea now is to be able to develop a marker from this, which could be validated subsequently and applied in marker-assisted selection to create possible, inducible varieties that could be induced to have size as well. Now, within amygdaloidae, or even in rosaceae, I've actually inquired around from several folks if there are other crops where you could actually induce abscission. Of course, you can't apply ethaphone to peaches or apples because you'll be basically, nuking your fruit on the tree. But definitely, there's an opportunity with almonds, for example, which are also considered not climacteric. And in our study, we had demonstrated even in almonds, some of this ACS, ACO genes are disrupted. There are some mutations in there that these genes are disrupted. So there is a mechanism within rosaceae, which is non-climacteric process of ripening, and we can definitely utilize ethylene applications pre-harvest to enable mechanical harvesting. What I haven't shown you here right now is also we have indication there might be some other genes that we could actually activate independent of the ethylene pathway and then apply those strategies also for inducing mechanical harvesting in apples and peaches as well. So that work is a little bit preliminary, so I didn't include much data on that. So right now, our ongoing work, we are planning to do some genetic validation. Of course, we need a segregating population with Bing as a parent. As far as I know, in Europe and US, I couldn't find anything. So Amy just informed me I should check Chile. So here's a trip to Chile for that purpose. Plus, at the same time, we have cloned these promoter regions. We are doing functional validation with transient expression where we've fuse these promoters with GFP and challenging it with or spraying with ethaphone to induce expression, as well as we'll be using tomato as a model to evaluate them through stable transgenics. So in summary, this natural variation in response to ethaphone really has presented us with a very concise and precise model where we can study abscission zone formation. And what we really found out here was the previously abscission-related documented genes do not really get induced by ethylene, at least. So we were able to utilize RNA-seq approach to identify sweet cherry-specific genes that are induced through ethylene. Co-expression analysis has given us a whole trove of genes that we are really following up on. Of course, looking at the ones which are really induced at a very high level. Ethylene responsive transcription factor. Transcription factors are not expressed at a very high level. And if you see, when we normalize those numbers, we see a 35-fold change in gene expression. And now that's called inducibility. Even in a transcription factor, that can really, that really puts it on the spot that this could be a gene involved in the process. So right now we just have sort of one line of evidence where we're working on adding different lines of evidence to this. We're continuing to do some implementation. We would like to validate these genes, first of all, through multiple processes, and then implementation via some markers, implementation in a breeding program to develop such varieties. In the end, I'd like to acknowledge Ben, who's a graduate student in the program, PhD candidate, finishing up this work. Jonathan, who actually has been working with us for the last 2 years, 3 years actually, supported by NSF. He's also an ACHS scholar here this year. And this work was done in collaboration with Ndozi, and Matthew Whiting was the PI of this NIFA grant, where we got to do the molecular work on that. And, you know, Ndozi has done a lot of characterization or developed QTLs for this pedicel fruit retention force, but I want to just tell you his work is primarily looking at non-ethylene treated genotypes. So it really, yes, there are some QTLs, and in fact there are more than four or five QTLs in that process that he's identified. I think our interest is primarily in looking at inducibility, and that's where the work really sets it apart, and that could be really useful. Obviously, I'd like to acknowledge the USDA and some funds for the Cherry Genome Project from the Free Fruit Research Commission. Thank you for your attention, and I'll take any questions.